Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Talk with Tenny, and thank you for calling in. Your line is open, area code 202.
Hey, Lauren, this is Yvonne Smith in Washington, D.C. Did you catch that show with Diane Reeves today?
I caught it, and I put video out of it, of some of it anyway. I did catch it. I was just saying my line was muted. I didn't realize. I was just saying how hot it is. It's getting out there, and that our rights are actively being working. People are actively working to take our rights further away from us, and I am pretty horrified by obviously what Murphy is. How Murphy is pushing this fraud. It's just fraud, Yvonne. Did you see it?
I didn't see it. I was in class. I was listening to it while I was on the computer, and I also played it back. And it was, as I'm saying, I've said on numerous forums that we need a media kit, because I think Diane Reeves, as a very unknowledgeable person, did the best that she could, but she didn't have good follow-up questions. And what has happened is that I don't know whether this is true or not. It seems to me either two things are happening. Either that Murphy and Tori are submitting questions to various news media for them to give, or that they're totally ignoring follow-up questions. I would like to believe that someone like Diane Reeves, who is an NPR person and who is widely respected, that they just didn't know, because I'll give you an example, is that when Diane Reeves asked a direct question whether this was an attempt to, and I'm paraphrasing, to have us go back to the bad old days where we had thousands of people in asylums, and that really wasn't AOT, really commitment, that Murphy launched into a very wide, diverse dialogue without saying, well, no or yes. And I replayed this about three times listening to it. And this is why I feel very strongly we need to have media kits for these people, because Diane Reeves did not follow up and say, I'm just asking you a question, yes or no. Are you in favor of committal law, and Representative Murphy, I will give him the respect that he probably doesn't give us, Representative Murphy, did not really answer. He just went on a tirade, and versus saying, oh yes, we want to have people committed, civilly committed, he went on about how he was helping families. It's very sad that the press, I think what happens is they're not knowledgeable of these things, and what they do is they rely on who their networks give them as media experts, and unfortunately the experts they give them are the people who are really opposed to us. That means like Jaffe and Tori, because I'm going to school now because I can't articulate fast enough to catch up. And my writing professor said to me, he says, Yvonne, you have to realize that they don't have reporters on beats anymore. What happens is they rely on these consolidators, which are Think Press, Kaiser, services, yeah, to give them kind of their brief up knowledge. In other words, before they come on air, where you used to go to a producer to do research, they will do some kind of internet research. And what happens is TAC, Treatment Advocacy Center, comes up high. So they take that information, they feed it to the interviewer. And that's what's happening here, is that unfortunately we are not high on the search. So when Diane Reeves, I think, did a very good job, despite the fact that she did not do follow-up questions.
Well, you're kinder than I am.
Well, they did have, I know, but you know what happened? We need a lot of people who really suffer, and I know this from being involved in some family. There are people where they really mean well, and they have family members that they feel that, you know, they are suffering, they're not getting what they need, and the mental health system is not giving them what they need, and because what happens is they're over-medicating them. They're over-medicating them, so they're getting over-medicated, and so what they think is not being serviced is that they're being over-serviced.
I don't necessarily disagree with you. I agree with you about the over-medication. I do want to give out the number. It's area code 267-521-0167. If you're listening and want to call in and have something to say about the activities on the Diane Reeves show today or anything else that's going on concerning the rights of people who are psychiatrically labeled, the number is area code 267-521-0167.
I know, but we should also be telling people on this broadcast, which is on every single night, is that people should really be by the telephone with pencil and paper in hand, because we do give them the number to call. We do give them action steps which they can pursue, action steps if they really feel very strongly about them. And Lauren, I know that you give them information about conferences and other information that they have. So what I'm saying to you is run. Do not walk. Get pencil and paper and have it by the phone, whether it's tonight or every night. And if you don't forget something tonight, whether it's tomorrow night or something else, have pencil and paper by phone, because we are giving you education Lauren is giving you education about what actually is happening, and a lot of people don't know about it. And 2 hours is a short time to tell you what is going on, because the mainline press, the CNO News, the CNNs, the CBSs, who gets all the commercial advertisements for Abilify and other things, they do not give that to you. And many of us have been, I call it myself, a true believer, because what happens is we do not realize that our rights are being violated. And as the guy from NDRN said on the Diane Reeves show, and you can go up to WAMU, W-A-M-U, and look at it, that this is a slippery slope.
I think he said it's a slippery slope, but I also think that he was supportive of the idea of a psychiatric system. And I think he was supportive of the idea that some people need to be treated and diagnosed and treated. And I think that at no point did they talk about the fraud of psychiatry. At no point was the actual field of psychiatry, or the idea that psychiatry can offer, that psychiatry has some solution for this, at no point was that discussed. And I feel like,
absolutely,
you know, Diane Reeves, she was, if she read her blog post, plenty of people prior to the show put up information about alternatives and about the damage that psychiatry is doing. And when people called in to report that they were damaged by psychiatry, she cut them off. And she did not let that voice air. And I think that this is part of the problem, and I agree with you that this is all being constructed by these big media companies, and Tory obviously has some fabulous publicist who is pushing him and the new book that he's got out, and there is an agenda driven focus here to limit the rights of people, and they are riding all of the problems in society on the backs of people with psychiatric histories, and I think that is just wrong. I think it's just absolutely wrong.
You're absolutely right, Lauren. But the thing about it, we have to dissect it, because what happens is the appeal to the wider masses as this, that they are suffering parents who really care. This is what the picture is, that my son, daughter, husband, they are really sick. And that because of whatever's happening with them, and I'm not buying into any of that, I'm just saying that they're saying that they have good motives. And what I say oftentimes is, and Diane Ring was not aware that, I'm just going to digress, that St. Elizabeth, which is a hospital in the District of Columbia, is still in existence.
Right.
Oftentimes I say to people who are parents of persons in St. Elizabeth, which is I'm going to be specific, the state hospital in the District of Columbia, and they have said, oh, well, I don't agree with the way they're treating them. Such and such. I says, well, you know, you can always bring a suitcase and agree to take them home. And that is a fallacy that people don't see, that people who claim, and I'm not saying everybody, but they claim that they feel as though their family members are not getting the best in a state hospital, is to say, look, all you have to do is to go up to the state hospital in your car and say, I want to support my son or daughter, and they can come home. And what I have found, and I know this is going to bode bad, is that many of the parents, siblings of people in state hospital, including an Office of Consumer and Family Affairs person in my city, is that when they say, oh, no, they can't come home with me, you know, because they threatened me when I pursue it and ask them. I find out this is something that happened 15 or 20 years ago. So I'm talking about people who have been in a state hospital for long lengths of time. I said, of course, something that happened 15 or 20 years ago does not mean it's true today. They just say, I want to make sure that they get the right care. And that means that they be locked up. The same thing for the family member in Kentucky who talked about their son who needed care. And I always say, can that person, if all those conditions you say that need to be in place, can they come home and live with you? And inevitably the answer is N-O, that they cannot. So it is really all about control.
It is
nothing
about
else.
Control, and people are really missing the boat on this one, and they're doing things so sneaky and so quickly that there's another new bill that comes out that came out by U.S. Representative Mike Thompson, California, the chair of the House Gun Violence Prevention Task Force. And so they're putting out a new bill called Promoting Healthy Minds for Safer Communities Act of 2014 that will create databases for people who have psychiatric histories. And on Thursday, they put forth an amendment.
Lauren, say it's not so. It's not so, really. Tell me you're lying.
No, and on Thursday they put forth an amendment to further fund the National Crime Index database with people with psychiatric histories being put into it. And on Friday morning it was passed. And so there's not even any time frame for people to respond. The legislature is just running with this, and there's absolutely no time to respond, and they just are putting things through, and it's going to be a total cramping on our civil liberties. And people think that this is looking at people who have psychiatric histories, and it's not. They are aiming to take away everybody's Second Amendment rights. They are looking to close all of these gaps. And literally, well, if something can be put on the floor on Thursday night and passed on Friday morning, how this can be called a process that allows people
what's
to
participate
bill? In
it. Do you have the bill number or the?
Yeah, I'm trying to pull it. I'm trying to pull it up here.
Well,
so
while you're trying to pull it up, let me say this. While you're trying to pull it up is, and I said this on my Facebook page, for many people who don't know the process for Congress and how a bill becomes law, I would suggest they Google a bill becoming law. There is hope for us, but it's not in the House of Representatives. It's in the Senate. And in the Senate, we don't have a bill yet. In the Senate, we need to have a bill. And the reason why I'm saying that is because if there's a bill from the Senate and there's a bill from the House, and there seems to be two, what happens is there has to be reconciliation. They usually go to conference. So we need to have a bill from the Senate so that it can be reconciled. And I am hopefully, as Ms. Lauren said, that both bills will be voted down, but I know realistically it's not, because Murphy and Tory and Jassy are manipulating the press and manipulating everything. Everything that they have going on has nothing to do with adding extra dollars. Listen to people who may disagree with Lauren and I. Is that there is no money, additional money for mental health. No additional money.
Well, what there's Assisted additional money out. For is legal processes, right? That's all they're looking at. So the bill that on May 28th, a press release came out from U.S. Congressman Mike Thompson's office representing California's 5th District. Chairman Thompson offers bipartisan amendment to strengthen background check system, and it says it's who is this? So it's Representative Pete King of New York, Elizabeth Etzi of Connecticut, Joe Heck of Nevada, Mike Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania, and Mike Quigley of Illinois to strengthen the National Instant Criminal Background Check System. The amendment provides an additional $19.5 million to help states improve their submissions into criminal background check systems, bringing NICS funding for fiscal year 2015 to $78 million. The amendment will be voted on tomorrow. So it's put on the floor on the 28th, and it's voted on the 29th. And it goes on to say, blah, 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 blah. Everyone agrees that we don't want criminals, drug abusers, or the dangerous mentally ill getting guns. And the first step is in stopping this is through background checks. But the background check system is only as good as the data you put in. And right now, all the information isn't getting in. And then they have the guy from the NRA. Sorry, I just hit the wrong button. The guy from the NRA saying the NRA supported it too, Wayne LaPierre said. Quote, our members don't want mental defectives and criminals buying handguns. We supported the background checks and support the money to make it work effectively. And so it's perfectly fine for them to call us the dangerous mentally ill and mental defectives and not have any, no recourse with absolutely no consequence. They can say whatever they want about us and continue this fraud that they're putting out. And then on May 29th, the press release out of Thompson's office says, bipartisan amendment to strengthen background check system passes House. And here it says, according to a recent report by Everytown, 12 states have still submitted fewer than 100 mental health records to the NICS system. And so here it is, the final lynch of us being treated as criminals for being diagnosed with something that isn't even ever proven to exist.
Lauren, let's give out the tip line, because we know that over the last few weeks we've had, on average, over 1,000 people who have been listening into our radio program. And I know some people are very fearful of calling in because where they live, they could be subject to being, we call it the District of Columbia, SB12, which is what is inpatient commitment. And we want to continue to have this line open because we know that you're listening. And would you please call Lauren and tell her about other subjects that you would like to have on the show? Because even if you are afraid and do not want to be heard online, we know that you're listening because we have data of who is listening and who is downloading the archives. Lauren, what is the tip line number?
The tip line number, 24 hours a day, except when we are online, on air, is area code 718-273-8708. And you can leave a message for me there. And if you'd like me to call you back, you can leave a number. And even if you want something to be anonymous, I will not disclose who you are to anybody. And so your anonymity is safe with me. The number is for the tip line is area code 718-273-8708. And if you're listening now and would like to call in, the number is area code 267-521-0167. I know there are a lot of people who are out there talking about this, and I think that, Yvonne, that you're right. Some people are concerned about broadcasting their views on air. But we are offering ways for people to be able to participate in making sure that their thoughts are heard, if not their voices. And I think that the money that is tied up in all of this, and people who are working in the quote unquote peer industry, many people have privately offered support to the idea of doing this and speaking out, but they themselves are hesitant to do so because of the funding that it is that they get. And so the tip line sets up.
And we're going to have to find some kind of way to continue to support you being online because this is a war that's going on. There's a war going on against. And I don't like using these words, they are their words, against the mentally ill or those who are diagnosed. And it's not unusual to see this happen historically. In Nazi Germany, the first people that they attacked were the mentally ill.
That's
then
right.
They came at the Gypsies, the Jehovah's Witness, and then the Jews. A lot of people just didn't believe this. They thought they were, because they were well-liked in the community, that they thought this wasn't going to happen. And all of a sudden, they found themselves rounded up, marked. Today, we don't mark people. We have databases. They didn't think this was going to happen. This was for the protection of the state. This is the same thing that people are saying now. We know that most people who have had some kind of emotional distress are not dangerous to other people. And I really was revolted when Murphy said today, he almost said that we want to have AOT to protect people because they might be robbed.
Yeah.
I mean, that they might be a victim of crime.
It's such a fraud. And, you know, in one breath, they're saying people with psychiatric histories are no more violent than anybody else. They're actually more likely to be the victim of a crime. And in the same breath, they're saying, but we need to put these laws in to be able to stop this from happening. And it's a veil. It's a smokescreen that this kind of law is going to stop these kinds of tragedies, because it absolutely will not.
To protect those people. And I had to say myself that I was one of those people. When I got at the hospital, I went somewhere and they took all my eyebrows off because I was not feeling it because of all the medication. That was in 1994. And they said that, well, we have people committing suicide. We have people who are being taken advantage of. We want to protect them, and the way to protect them is for us to have assisted outpatient treatment, which he denies online by omission that it is really a judicial process. It has nothing to do with providing additional services. I mean, really, they are taking advantage of people who really mean well, that they have family members who they feel that need additional services and not getting it. So if AOT, outpatient commitment, is not going to give you something additional, but just going to put a mark on your loved one, why would you want to do it? I think a lot of family members are going to be, unless they are complicit in trauma and sexual abuse, that's the only reason I could see that someone would do this, is they were complicit in covering up trauma or sexual abuse for their family members, they don't find that they're kind of SOL. It's just out of luck.
It really, I mean, and I think that, you know, if you're a family member or somebody who has a loved one who's caught up in all of this, and all the only message you've been getting is that, you know, that this is a biomedical issue and that drugs are going to curtail it, there's so much other information that's available to people. There are so many other alternatives that can be utilized, especially like trauma-informed care, and helping people get economically set. So many of the issues that wind up causing adult children and their parents to have disputes are economically based. And so if there was an economic solution to this, if they were saying, let's get people who are getting psychiatrically assigned into education and training programs of their choosing, let's figure out how to create natural community supports for people so they feel like they have somebody that they can talk to when they're having some kind of emotional thing. But they're not doing that. All they're doing is drugs and the involuntary outpatient commitment and institutions. And, you know, like Anthony was on last night talking about his experiences with involuntary outpatient commitment. And people, you know, one of the things he said that was really so disturbing to me was that he doesn't feel comfortable talking to the mental health providers because at any given point, based on their judgment, he can be put into an institution. So in a therapeutic situation, in a true therapeutic situation, somebody is supposed to be able to talk openly and honestly about what's going on to work through issues and to vent about the emotions that they're having. And so if people under these laws are afraid to express themselves in any way that might be seen as, problematic to some psychiatric worker, then it's being absolutely counterproductive in the process, because people who may have some kind of emotional crisis aren't even being given the venue to express themselves out of fear that they're going to admit it.
Well, that's where I think Barbara is correct, because what he said was he feared, or him or the MDRN representative, is that as a result of Murphy, that they would do nothing but drive people underground, people that would seek help for relationships and other things. And I understand that people are saying that, you know, there are many made up illnesses.
But nobody's talking about that.
But there's no doubt that people want to talk about their failure and the family's failure to come forth to have relationships. If you have a person who supposedly has a loving family and they don't want you to come home for holidays, just make sure you keep them in the psychiatric, that you keep them in the state hospital. That's a problem. If the primary focus is to keep people contained and not have them to be integrated into their wider community, that's a problem. And we're not addressing the fact that people can and do recover, and recovery is part of being part of an integrated community, and that the fact that violence prevention and mental health have to be decoupled. They're not the same thing. I know that in some places they're very fearful because the Obama administration has a clemency program where they're looking to address a bad thing where people who were basically users of marijuana and nonviolent crimes were incarcerated for a long period of time, and they can now petition for clemency. So someone who spent 18, 28 years in prison for purchasing marijuana, don't have a violent history, can be let out. And I think that this is a lot of this is to make sure that these people are taken apart and in a methadone-type system. It's not lost for me when we went to a few of us, Dan Fisher, Diane Angster, Daniel Hazen. We went to the Heritage Foundation, which is a very conservative think tank, and people actually espoused the fact that they wanted to make sure that they kept people in large state institutions. The things that Diane Rings was not able to press people on. But that's their real goal. Their real goal is to take money from, which is not very much, the community behavioral health, and take that money and dump it into institutions where you will keep people locked up.
Absolutely. I just want to say that there are a few people who are on who are holding online here. If you want to speak at any point, please press 1 to let me know that you would like to join the conversation. Also, if you'd like to call in, the number is area code 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. I think part of the problem, Yvonne, is that if you look at Murphy's webpage at murphy.house.gov / Helping Families and Mental Health Crisis Act, you know, that he states definitively that more than 11 million Americans have severe schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and major depression. However, there is not one shred of evidence that any of those diagnostic categories are actually in existence. There is no biological evidence for these quote-unquote disorders or diseases that they exist. And they are putting this forth as if that there is a legitimate science here and a legitimate fix that psychiatry has. And it just doesn't. And the fact that they are able to allow this kind of fraud to be perpetrated and not held accountable anywhere is just so much of the problem. You know, one of the other things his bill does.
Can you repeat that with us?
Sure. Hold on one second. It's murphy.house.gov/Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act. And there you can see all of the bill information, the floor speeches that he's given, the press releases, the letters of support, and the bill information, including co-sponsors and bill text. And so when you look at who sponsors and who he gets letters of support from, it's the Treatment Advocacy Center, the American Psychological Association, the American Psychiatric Association, NAMI, the National Sheriff's Association, the National Association of Psychiatric Health Systems, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, Center for Substance Abuse Research, mentalillnesspolicy.org, and others. And almost all of them are going to financially benefit from this bill. The only people who don't actually financially benefit from this bill are the people who are directly subject to it. And I think that this is another major issue that we need to be looking at.
Let's see if there's anyone that wants to come on, and afterwards we should take brick by brick, not tonight, maybe tomorrow night, what's underlying these bricks that we have. You've named quite a few organizations and people who might be benefiting or biased against the rights of people who have been labeled mental defectives. And I'm not saying that I feel that people are defective. I'm just saying that society has labeled us as mental defects. And whether you are defective or not, it's just that we have been labeled that way, and we need to be able to have some way to address the bad labeling that has gone on. And I hope that some other people who are listening in might want to come in and express to us what their experience has been and what they felt about the radio broadcast every early today. And there probably are others across the country that we don't know about. And we need to come together so that we can share what's going on, the attack and the war on people who have been. I disagree with the fact that they say there are people who don't know that they're mentally ill. I think what we have is that we have people who don't want to be oppressed.
Absolutely, and this term anosognosia that Murphy keeps on putting off as if it's a legitimate thing that people aren't, that they don't have insight into the fact that they're quote unquote sick, and that this is yet another brain disease that they are suffering from. It's so illegitimate. So many of the things that people wind up getting diagnosed for is because they have a different set of values or political beliefs or spiritual beliefs that are not in line with the people who are immediately surrounding them. And when those kinds of conflicts come up, of where people are being diagnosed as quote-unquote schizophrenic because they talk about a spiritual experience they have, or because they dissent from the acceptable political ideology of those around them, that people really do get diagnosed for these kinds of things. People really do get diagnosed with schizophrenia because they have a relationship with God. These are things that, and then wind up getting electroshocked and drugged and committed because they told somebody about the experiences they had. So what trust does anybody have if they can diagnose you based on a subjective observation of a cluster of supposed symptoms that have been voted on by a group of people that all have financial ties to the pharmaceutical industry? It really is criminal. You know, the other night I was talking about Dr. John Grohl's on Psych Central, has put together for several years now the top 25 psychiatric medication prescriptions. And in 2013, there were literally Xanax, Zoloft, Celexa, Prozac, Ativan are the top five selling prescriptions with 100, with like literally 200 million prescriptions written in this country. And so if you have all of these people who are on these psychiatric drugs that are really mind control and are altering the way people are thinking and experiencing their realities, you know, obviously this is a major problem. And these drugs also obviously make tons of money at great, great, huge profit. These drugs
are... You just hit it on the head. But you just hit it exactly on the head. What it is that there is great profit to be made. I say this quite often. And I was a true believer. I was 39, 40 years old before I got sleep. Did not realize it was related to childhood sexual trauma. But they came and they offer you a pill. They could help you. They don't tell you that as a result of taking that pill, you might gain 100 pounds. You might get diabetes. You might have arthritis because you're so overweight. They don't tell you this. They don't give you truth. My whole thing is that they don't give you information that you should have there. They don't tell you the truth. There is no shared decision-making. And I understand that when people are in desperate situations, they may not have all of the information. But it's
no,
all
they
fraud. It's a fraud because all they want to do is to say, here, we have a pill that will help you. And the thing about it, it's a lie because you still have to work on yourself. All of the people who Murphy and Tory claim that they want to protect the public from had social issues. Adam Lanza was by himself. His neighbors did not even know that he was there. The guy in California, he just wanted a girlfriend on the weekend. The same thing for Troy, who was in Virginia. He was isolated. The Columbine, too, was the same thing. They were bullied. Many of these people, and even the guy in California, who shot the congressperson. These things would not have been helped by any assisted outpatient treatment.
And they also wouldn't have been caught in this NCIS database because they didn't have they didn't have psychiatric histories, and they weren't involuntarily involved. And so part of what Barbara, Congressman Representative Barbara, is doing, and we need to be very concerned about this Barbara bill, because he is pro-forced psychiatric treatment. He is pro-identification, assessment, treatment, and pro-institutionalization and involuntary outpatient commitment. And he's also who he's targeting, who his bill, Barbara's bill targets, 4574, is young people, young adults, and veterans. And so this is going to be a wide sweeping thing if this comes out. I was just alerted to this article on sandyhookpromise.org. And it says Sandy Hook Promise supports Promoting Healthy Minds for Safer Communities Act, and that's the Thompson bill that I was just referring to before. And it says, in the aftermath of another round of lethal gun violence perpetrated by a mentally ill individual with access to firearms, Sandy Hook Promise released this statement today. Quote, gun violence is not an abstract policy issue. It is a lethal threat that takes away innocent lives, destroys families, and leaves endless trails of grief in its wake. Mental illness does not lead to gun violence. The mentally ill are more often victims than perpetrators. But there are common sense solutions to reduce gun violence committed by the mentally ill, and it is time to act now. We applaud Congressman Thompson and the co-sponsors of the Promoting Healthy Minds for Safer Communities Act for recognizing the importance of mental health in reducing gun violence, and we will do everything in our power to see this bill becomes law. The answer to building safer communities for our children is to embrace these common sense solutions that will save lives and families. And I mean, obviously, I feel for all of the families and all of the loved ones of people who have lost people to gun violence. I'm not in any way justifying anything that was done. But in the same breath, it is Yvonne, it is constantly in the same breath that psychiatric history doesn't necessarily indicate anything. If it indicates anything, it's that people with psychiatric histories are more likely to be victims than perpetrators. But we've got to do this anyway because this will end violence committed by the quote-unquote mentally ill.
It will not end violence. This is why I keep saying you have to decouple. You have to decouple violence prevention from mental health. And I understand some people think that's the way to get money is by linking them together. But the fact is, this is... Same thing is, I have a needle in my house. I want to find it. It's 2,000 square feet. Let me burn the house down to find the needle. And that's the same thing. You had a very good example online about the number of violent deaths caused versus these individual massacres. In many given metropolitan areas, you have people who are constant, I call them constant, serial domestic violence abusers, who abuse their spouses, their neighbors, and they do not get anything. It's more a predictor of whether a person is going to do violence is if they have had some kind of domestic charge and the fact that they might have a mental illness. If they want to stop gun violence, they will look at who is taking advantage of women and children. They don't look at that because the National Rifle Association has a very strong lobby.
They do. And, you know, Yvonne, I think you bring up a really good point here because there are over 10,000 murders a year in 2010, I think was the most recent data that I was able to find. There were over 10,000 murders that year, and about 8,000 and change of them were done using a gun. As far as society knows, the only murders that ever really occur are these big mass murders that are committed by people with a quote-unquote psychiatric history. They're not talking about the other, 8,542 murders that occurred that year. They are sensationalizing us. They are writing these kinds of legislation on our backs. And with the Thompson bills, he has an absolute intention to close out the ability for anybody to have a gun, even though he says that he's pro-gun because he himself hunts or whatever. There is an all-out assault on our Second Amendment rights. And like they did in Germany.
It's against protection of women. If you have a female who has been a victim of domestic violence, I think about the Alexander case. If you've been beaten to submission and you have a spouse or a partner and you fear for your life and you go to get help. My mother did this. I speak of a personal experience. My mother and my sister both. My mother went to get help. They tried the mental health and the state hospital were all connected together. She wanted help to remove us from the home. You know what they said? They wanted to inter her. My sister was a victim of trauma as a child who was in a very destructive relationship. Found herself in a private hospital in a padded cell. They transferred her to the state hospital. This has been many, many years ago. She's now very sick. But the social worker told her, you don't want to be here. You want to get out. But the fact is that we have people who have been a victim, whether it's a victim of domestic violence, sexual abuse, it's not unheard of. I've had it happen to me.
2 out of every 3 girls and 1 out of every 3 boys before their 16th birthday would be physically or sexually abused.
I've been a victim of religious abuse. And what happens is that person gets squashed up because whoever is in the power, the usually abuser or other people who are trying to keep the abuser from coming to light, has power. They can have that person be involved in treatment because they'll say, oh, they have a problem. And they get abused as a result of that, and they get questioned. We have people, there's about 260 people at our state hospital in Washington, D.C. I go over there several times a month. Been doing it since 1999. Other groups, the NAMI, the other people who get contacts, they don't come. But what happens is they are laid low. They don't know who to trust. Even, I have to say this, even the PNA give them some semblance of help. But not really. When you're in a place where you've been there 10, 12 years, they control what you eat, when you go to bed, what privilege you have. It is a totally different situation. And even though AOT does not call for excessive outpatient, does not call for inpatient, what they do with this so horrific mercy deal is to take money from the public community health system to give dollars to the state hospital. And that's a bad thing because we know that most people do not need to be locked up.
Right, it's a bad thing. And Yvonne, I think it's important to mention at the same time that they're going to be increasing involuntary outpatient stuff, which would put people at further risk of being institutionalized, the Murphy bill slashes protection and advocacy services for individuals with psychiatric histories. And so
take money from community health because Medicaid dollars pays for mental health. Takes that money and says it should be used for inpatient care. It takes it. The woman who was on the Diane Reeves show who was in Kentucky, and my heart goes out to her. But what she said was she was giving a case. She said her son had been and care since 8 years low age that he had been having his voluntary treatment. For 8 years of age. So that tells you that the involuntary treatment was not working.
No, and obviously there's also plenty of research that shows, and I'm looking here at a thing in the Liberty Crier on June 3rd, 2014, that says that nearly every mass shooting in the last 20 years shares one thing in common, and it wasn't weapons. And what it was these SSRIs. And so we're creating laws that will put people on these drugs that are associated with a higher rate of violence and specifically gun violence.
And we should be saying that as a result of that, that there's something wrong with the SSRIs. Really, that's what you'd be saying. And the Diane Reeves of the world, the reporters, the news people, the CNO News, the CNN, the CBS, they don't have the knowledge. They're not asking the right questions. Diane Reeves did an excellent job on the outgo. She had a cross-section of people. She had NDRN. She had both competing bills on. She had some advocates on. She did not have anybody who had lived experience.
And when she did have somebody with lived experience who called in, who talked about being electroshocked and the damage that was done to her, she cut her off and she made her line go dead, and she didn't deal with it. And you know, this guy who wrote this article, Dan Roberts, about the SSRIs, he says, those focusing on further firearms bans or magazine restrictions are clearly focusing on the wrong issue and asking the wrong questions, either as a deliberate attempt to hide these links or out of complete and utter ignorance. Don't let them force our elected representatives and the media to cast a harsh spotlight on these issues. Don't stop hounding them until they do.
I've been trying to speak to Leah and other people to this fact, but they don't want to sit down and talk to you. What happens is the press is inadequately prepared to deal with a marketing machine like Tory and Jackie. They themselves don't have the knowledge. We have to give them the knowledge, or either we have to do as you're doing, as an alternative media. And they do not have the knowledge that it needs to be, because they are actually have an agenda. And their agenda is really, and I know people say, Elon, you're wrong about this. Their agenda is to make it so that anyone that they want to, that they can have them locked up. That's the agenda. And America should wake up and say, this may or may not be true, but I need to listen to this. And that's what the agenda is, that whether you like it or not, that if you're in a small town, and many people who are listening to this are a small town, is that your sheriff, your police can decide, your spouse who may have some position can decide that they want to have you locked up. And they can use mental health issues as a reason to do that. And they can have you forcibly to take medications and things that might be hurtful to you.
Well, I think unfortunately what's going to happen is by the time people do realize what's happening, once they have to start getting their own mental health screenings under the Affordable Care Act and substance use screenings, that they are going to be too late, and that they're going to that it's going to be too late, that we're not going to be able to stop it, because it's coming in, and because the drumbeat of the media is to classical conditioning. It's like what any basic Psych 100 student would be aware of, that if you want to condition fear in a person, that you couple a loud noise with something that isn't actually frightening, the way that they would with a little white rat, they would create a bang, and little Albert became scared of something that he wasn't scared of before. And so the way that they're all pushing it, including Barbara, is that every time that they try to make a statement that will infringe on our rights, they immediately call up some heinous act done by an individual and then put a mass, blanket over anybody who's been psychiatrically labeled as this is something that would
That's
stop
why I
this
say
from
you
happening.
But to decouple is to decouple to help the threat, decouple violence prevention from mental health, because it's like I said, it's like burning down the whole house to get a needle. And we have to help them to decouple that, because with all these cases, that even if the draconian measures that Tory would like to have in place, they would not have. They would not have stepped in Newtown. They would not have stopped a California case that happened recently. They would not have stepped any of that. Things that people don't like having outreach, having people to have a place to go to talk to people if they don't feel well about themselves. Those are the things that help people, because, you know, in the last two cases, you pointed out online, Lauren, it seems as though both of these people had autism, and it was not a mental health issue at all.
And it's not an autism issue either. I would like to just make sure that that's clear. That this isn't that people with autism should be who should be being attacked. But it's not a psychiatric issue either.
People who are socially compromised. I'll take that back. I'll erase that if I could. I know I can't. But Adam Lanza and Mr. Rogers, this is his last name, from California. These were people who were socially isolated. They were socially isolated. Adam Lanza was socially isolated. His mother thought it was a good idea to take him to the range and learn about shooting. The other young man in California, I mean, these parents sometimes act as if they have no choice. This guy is driving a BMW. He's going on the red carpet. They didn't need the mental health system. They could have simply told him, look, if you don't do X, Y, and Z, we won't give you your car payment. We will not give you this and that. So, I mean, this is not the case of that.
And I think it's important to note with Rogers, I read his autobiography there, and this was a calculated, intentional, well-planned, long-thought-out process that he went through, where on three separate occasions he went and bought different guns, tons of ammunition that he had, all while he was seeing different professionals and adults. And he consistently wrote about how he was cast out and that he didn't have, that nobody took him seriously, that when he did go to the psychiatrist, that they spent more time dealing with the squabble between his parents and his stepmother than focusing on his own issue. And then when the doctor finally got to his issue, his solution was to drug him. And I think that these are the kinds of things that we really need to make sure that society understands. And, of course, I'm not justifying Rogers' acts in any way, but there were many, many places in time where something else could have been done, and that he actually said around his own sexuality that he wished that somebody would have explained to him what was happening. Area code 646, your line is open. Hello? Area code 646?
You cannot be a part.
You're breaking up a little bit. Can you maybe, if you're on speaker, can you take it off speaker?
Hello?
I think people need to know that we're on a blog radio, and that it might be very good unless you're in a forum where you have many people. I know that people are calling in where they have people grouped together, but to take us off of speaker.
Hello.
Okay.
Yes, hello.
Hi, it's Lauren. It's Les.
Hey, Lester. How you doing?
All right. How are you?
Good. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I think what happened with Paolo Del Vecchio today is really fucked up.
Yes, and we're on public radio, so please watch your language.
I mean, really, he knows better than anybody else that there's no evidence, and yet he knowingly and willingly chose to lie. I have a real problem with that.
Well, I think that this is a big issue, and just to let people know what you're talking about and what this is, let me see if I could scroll down my page and get to that article that came out, because that was early this morning. That was like 7 o'clock this morning, right, because we totally missed everything that happened before the Diane Rehm show. Thanks for bringing it up. So Paolo Del Vecchio, yeah, I'm really utterly disappointed by this, and I really had to read it a couple of times to make sure that it was actually him who wrote it, but apparently he did. Paolo Del Vecchio is the director of the Center for Mental Health Services, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, and in an article about the power of prevention, he wrote, quote, even if we do not yet have a vaccine type of prevention intervention for serious mental illness, we can help reduce symptoms and disabling impacts if intervention occurs early. It behooves us to take advantage of the promise that prevention brings. And so I was pretty disgusted that he would even suggest that there would maybe be a vaccine for something that doesn't even exist, a quote-unquote serious mental illness. And you know, why stop at vaccine and why not just have us aborted and you know, and not given the opportunity to be born? What do you think about this?
Well, I think he's a sellout, and that's my real problem with it. Samson was the last stronghold. And like you, I agree. If, you know, now Falk and the rest of them come in and do whatever the hell it is they want to do, they deserve what they get, because they did not have the courage to take a stand. Because guess what? I may not work on a mobile crisis team anymore because I would not sell out, because I stuck to my values. I stuck to my principles. You know,
I think that's part of, just to give people a little background here, one of the things that the Murphy Bill 3717 does is it slashes SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, of which Paolo Del Vecchio is the director. And I can't say for fact because I haven't spoken to him, and last I checked, my comments, and I've heard other people's comments, have not been published on the page, so they're not even letting, you know, a response to this kind of, you know, perpetrated fraud go be aired. But because TAC is going after them in terms of TAC, because Murphy Bill, TAC, they're all the same, I guess, right, is going after them saying that they don't focus on serious mental illness, and that now they're using jargon such as, like, a vaccine as a prevention for this to happen as a way to try to salvage their organization. And it is such a betrayal. It is such an absolute betrayal of people who are psychiatrically labeled, and it puts out the idea that if there's no vaccine, it puts out the idea that maybe there's some evidence or fact to the idea of quote-unquote mental illness existing, which there is none. So probably before they try to find a vaccine for it, they should try to come to terms with the fact that there is no evidence for this thing existing. So it's really hard to find a vaccine for something
that doesn't
exist.
I like the way you hammered him, though, about end child abuse and neglect and poverty.
And Lauren, I'm listening to you, and I'm hanging on you. Are you saying that Paolo actually said something about having a vaccine for mental illness?
Yeah, he wrote, even if we do not yet have a, quote, vaccine type of preventative intervention for serious mental illnesses, We can help reduce symptoms and disabling impacts if intervention occurs early, even if we do not yet have a vaccine type of preventive intervention. Yeah, Paolo Del Vecchio, who's supposed to be our staunch supporter there. According to my page here, my comment is still awaiting moderation, and my comment went up at 8:24 a.m. And so, I've heard from others that they also put up comments and, that were not published. And I do think that if this is going to be what SAMHSA's putting forward, that they do deserve to get cut. Why bother? They're just going to be more of the same. So what difference does it make if they exist or not, if they're not supporting us?
Is I know some folks went over to the Rayburn Building to visit some of the Congress folks in the very beginning when they wanted – hold on a second.
So I think
when
that
they wanted, when they wanted a different bill totally than the Murphy bill, one that was based on trauma-informed work and people's traumatic experiences, they went and they did a whole thing on that, and they had the audacity after that to turn around and just introduce the Barber bill. And there are those who may disagree with the Murphy bill, and that's several of us, but most of us, if you were to really look at the Murphy bill, for all its coercion, at least it addresses something. It's a far better bill. And I was so angry when I heard that people went, took the time to educate legislators, and they did nothing. And I have a real problem with that. You know, when you get a
well,
chance
I think
to
the
do Barbara, something
I think,
and do the right thing and work
I
from
think,
a trauma-informed base. Really sucks.
They're not working on a trauma informed base at all. And after listening to Barbara on the Diane Rehm show today, I'm just horrified that this is what's being supported. The idea that early intervention, identification, assessment, diagnosis, and treatment for young people, young adults, and veterans is who it is that the Barbara bill is going to be targeting. With a clear statement of his support for forced psychiatric treatment. Barber is not in any way our friend, and this legislation,
yes.
Enough with the legislation, no more, we're legislated to death. We don't need any more
you.
Legislation.
Well, here's the thing. Everybody's been upset with me because I dared to speak the truth. I said, if any one of these males had been a man of color, we would be having a totally different conversation.
I agree.
I promise you that. We would be having a totally, totally different conversation. But because these men are white, we are having conversations about forced treatment. In the end,
exactly.
That's what it boils down to.
Yvonne?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, think about it, Lauren.
Wait, let Yvonne speak.
The profile for these masculines are all white males. White males. They are not black males. And we look at the profile for this, and what we would say is, why don't we have all black males that have some emotional stress locked up? And I think this is what is happening. I saw this when I was in the family, a family organization, where they were upper middle class, white parents who were disappointed that their children had not progressed educationally or professionally. And sometimes it's happened with black upper middle class. It's a class thing. It's not. And these people formed organizations. So, I mean, the people who are going to be disproportionately affected by this are not going to be white males who have a lot of money. We just saw an incident this week where Donald Sterling, for his mental condition, is being denied his right to be able to pursue fighting against his thing. I hate to say this, because I hate to say this to someone who makes such racist statements, but they have this right, but everyone does. This is a real test of whether you are a right person or not. And so we have more of these people who look like me, which I'm an African-American female, are going to be put under stress. I understand that the reason why some of this is coming because the present presidential occupiers of the White House have put a call to have people to petition to get clemency where they have been involved in nonviolent drug abuser crimes. You had marijuana on you, you bought it. You had it in your possession. And to get out.
But Yvonne, my point is that this would be treated as a crime. We would not be talking about diagnosis and people need treatment, and this would have been treated as a crime.
I agree,
you know,
and it would be absolutely. I want to say area code 907, your line is open. What do you want to talk about?
Hi, Lauren. This is Nancy Rubenstein Del Judas from the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights. How are you?
I'm good, Nancy. How are you?
I'm great. What I called in to talk about was school screening.
Yeah.
That's something that people have been talking about a lot. And I want to talk about basically disaster capitalism and how that relates to school screening.
Please do.
Well, the idea is a great one. Gee, wow, couldn't we, if we found these mental illnesses early, we could treat people. Everyone likes that idea, but it falls apart under the microscope because there is no disease, and the problems in living that people have are often exacerbated by toxic drugs that don't treat anything, but this becomes a way that the pharmaceutical industry swoops in with this false promise of, oh, we can help, when really what it's about is just having new subjects, new guinea pigs, new increasing the market share. Everyone is a target for products. And the American public is in serious danger of continuing to buy into this. And we've got 10,000, I think it's 10,000 toddlers on drugs for ADHD. This is what the real epidemic. And this kind of disaster capitalism is something that a lot of people are familiar with from when Katrina hit, and then there was all kinds of horrible things that went on in Louisiana. But the bottom line is that we have today a country in which our Congress does not protect us. It serves the private interests. Our FDA is completely broken bought out, the head of it being Monsanto. So it's the chemical companies that are actually running the show. And the American public has got to wake up. And for me, the bottom line is this thing of school screening. I heard someone say, oh, well, if it's optional, that's okay. But that's not okay. Number one, it doesn't work. Number two, it's based on a lie. Number three, when something becomes optional, then it can very easily become required. And especially when it serves such a lucrative purpose for the pharmaceutical industry, this is just a disaster.
Absolutely, it is a disaster, and you know I'm just looking at this article that came out in the Liberty Beacon today about how schools are making big money on ADD and ADHD, a fraudulent diagnosis that the guy who created it on his deathbed said that it was completely constructed and that it wasn't based in any kind of reality, and that you've got all of these teachers who are now being put in charge of diagnosing kids because they're not being able to, they're not able to teach them. And so instead of figuring out alternative ways to educate young people, they're drugging them. And now
was it Illinois that just passed? I'm not sure what state just passed prescribing privileges for psychologists. This is not good.
No, it really isn't. It really is very bad. And the idea of putting kids on Ritalin or Adderall, which is the same class drug as cocaine is so illegitimate. We're teaching young people from a young age that drugs fix problems, and drugs don't fix problems. Drugs increase problems. And so according to this article says, according to the DEA, the production and use of
methamphetamine, yeah.
Thank you, increased almost sixfold between 1990 and 1995. And so there is a mass drugging of children in this country, and educators are being responsible for it. And then when a parent chooses to not comply with the psychiatric assessments and treatments of their child, they lose their child for medical neglect, and Child Protective Services comes in and takes their child away from them, and this is another whole industry that then profits off of this.
Oh yes, and I've become so much more aware of this industry of CPS and this whole revolving door with psychiatry since I've been working for the last few months on the Justina Pelletier case. And this is an example of a girl in Boston who was snatched up by psychiatry when she was meant to be admitted for a gastroenterological problem. And this Boston Children's Hospital and Boston in general has this predisposition to believe that up to 50% of pediatric cases are psychosomatic, all in your head. I mean, that's amazing. And this is their agenda, and the agenda of psychiatry in Boston, which is really where a lot of and Harvard really is where this epidemic comes from, particularly with supposed treatment of children. Joseph Biederman at Harvard really just came up with this incredibly billion-dollar racket, money-making deal to assign children as being mentally ill, which they weren't mentally ill before Joseph Biederman. The worst thing, the most that you could say about a young person was that they were severely emotionally disturbed. But all that changed right at the end of the 1980s, and it was really Harvard's initiative. And what's going on there now is they've got this agenda to have somebody, have a psychiatrist in on every single case. And it's a cancer. I'm sorry. It's a cancer.
I agree with you. And Nancy, I want to thank you for the work that you're doing to help free Justina. And, for people who don't know, the website to get involved is justiceforjustina.com. And the hashtag for the campaign is pound hashtag free Justina. Would you be willing to give just a little bit of an idea about what happened to her family process?
Sure. The brief version chronologically?
Okay, yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, so go back to February 2013. The family of Justina Pelletier put her in an ambulance to go from West Hartford, Connecticut, to Boston Children's and Hospital. She was being treated by Tufts for mitochondrial disease, which is a very complicated thing. And anyone who's listening to this, the same thing has happened to a lot of people with Lyme's disease. As new things develop, they're complicated. And so this girl, she arrives at Boston Children's Hospital, and a young psychologist and neurologist meet the family, and they decide that they think that it might be psychosomatic, and they prevent her from having any contact with the other physicians. And then on Valentine's Day, this West Hartford family has their child removed to the custody of Massachusetts, and have they have to get a lawyer and show up in Roxbury.
Well, what do you mean? Can you just I know what you mean, but can you just explain what you mean by removed from the family?
Okay, right. Thanks, Lauren. To be more clear, DCF was called in. There was a charge of medical abuse against the parents.
That's the Department of Children and Families.
Children and Families. That's right. So someplace it's called CPS. In Massachusetts it's DCF, and because they disagreed, they were told that they had to go along with this treatment plan that Boston Children's had just put together, which was basically all about taking her off all of the treatment that she was working for her. The girl was a competitive ice skater at the time. She's been 15 months in the custody of Massachusetts. She's in a wheelchair. It's turned into a political harangue. But Justina has recently been moved from Massachusetts to Connecticut, but she's still in the custody of Massachusetts. And this is still going on. But, you know, you thanked me for working on this case, but I have to tell you that there are over 50,000 people who are on the Facebook page that the family runs. In fact, the sister Jennifer is the administrator. It's called A Miracle for Justina. And there are – it's just really exciting how people are getting involved and people are beginning to educate themselves. When I first got involved with this and I started saying, you know, this is not the first time this kind of thing has happened, people got very angry at me. And there's been a real learning curve, and over a period of time, the people have begun to listen to other cases, and there's the education that's been going on is really exciting. And last weekend, a week ago Saturday, 4,000 people turned out because Jeff Kooner, who's of WRKO in Boston, organized a protest in front of the State House, and there were 4,000 people who turned out for that. And people get the message. If that can happen to this family, that can happen to anyone, and that is a fact.
And so I guess it's my understanding that Justina just celebrated her 16th birthday, and that it was the first time she was allowed to speak to or see friends in over.
They
in
had
15,
a little. They had a party.
Months. Yeah,
yes, it is.
And to see the pictures, if you don't know about this on Facebook, go to A Miracle for Justina and go look at all of the outpouring of support that she's getting and the horrors that her and her family have been subjected to over the last year and a half or 2 years. Nancy, it's my understanding that Lou Pelletier, her father, that a gag order was put on him?
That's right. That's right.
Can you explain what that was about for people?
Well, they were told that they couldn't go to the media. He was told that they were going to, you know, keep custody of Justina, and there was a gag order that he was not allowed to go to the media. And, you know, that just weighed heavily upon him because he's a strong supporter of the American Constitution, and he knew in his gut that this was seriously wrong. I mean, and he did go to the media. He went on Dr. Phil. He went on Glenn Beck, and then it got a lot of attention. Mike Huckabee, tend to be kind of conservative Republican, and that's something that really bothers me. Why it is that I don't see the some of the people that I have held in such high esteem, like Elizabeth Warren, and as a matter of fact, any single Democrat to comment on this case. It hasn't happened. So they went to the media, and then he could have been in contempt of court, and then they took away the gag order.
That's why it's so important that we support Lauren and her alternate media, because these things are not getting out. It's only because of social media, Facebook, Twitter, the blog radio. This is the only reason why it's getting out. It's the only reason why it's getting out. You know, this radio broadcast has no sponsors. There's no one coming forth to say to support Lauren and having this on the radio. It's horrible what's happened to Justina's family. I can imagine being a mother or a father, and you just have nothing to say. And even the other advocates, and then you have this Murphy bill coming out, because there are poor people who don't have even lower middle class. Middle class means where this happens to them, there's nothing they can.
They don't have a. They don't have a chance. Yeah,
they
it's
have
true.
No chance whatsoever, and they have a child who has a medical, a hereditary medical illness. And a child, well, you said, was a competitive sports figure, to be crippled And we don't know if these things will be, they could be permanent.
It's
and at
true.
The same time, you may have no, even afterwards, you have no recourse to sue.
That's right.
Because I mean, they permanently damage your life for the rest of your life.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that is why this MRF right now, we've got to stand up for rights now with this legislation, because people have no rights right now. This bill will make everything worse.
And I just want to just shine some light on here, just in case people don't realize. Mitochondrial disease is something that can be tested. It is something that is an actual medical condition. Somatoform disorder, which is what they took all of Justina off all of the vitamins and any medical treatment she was getting, somatoform disorder has zero proof of existing. And so the idea that psychiatry can say that a medical condition is a fraud and put forth their diagnostic criteria, which has no evidence at all, and lock this girl up in a psychiatric institution with who knows what it is she's witnessing or experiencing or
yeah.
what drugs
yeah.
she's being on. There was a note that she was able to get out saying that they're pushing her and they're hurting her. And when I made complaints to the DCF and the Boston, Massachusetts Department of Mental Health and the police, they all completely disregarded this, and to the best of my knowledge, have not done any investigation into the abuse that she was experiencing while in the institution. And so this is another major thing of where somebody who has an actual medical illness is being treated as if they are incompetent and being held in an institution as a child, where all normal developmental markers are prevented.
This important year of her life is gone, yeah.
Wasn't her mother prevented from seeing her for a while?
Oh, yes. Your mother was prevented. She was prevented from seeing her mother on Mother's Day. Here's what's really sinister that I want people to understand, which is that Boston Children's Hospital has a research. They can conduct research on any ward of the state, even if it's not to the benefit of that child and may even have more than small negative consequences.
And so this idea of young people being experimented on when they get in foster care is something that we're also trying to really shine light on. Not only are they being drugged and done whatever they want because the state is their parent now, but the state works complicitly with researchers where they are just giving these young people over to be subjects in research with no informed consent. Institutional review boards should be up in arms about what's happening with children in foster care, and they should be protecting them. I just want to give the number out. If you want to call in, the number is area code 267-521-0167. Area code 267-521-0167.
Well, I have to go, but
it was a pleasure talking to you, Lauren.
Thank you, Nancy, for calling and for informing us, and thanks for all the work that the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights is doing. If people want to find out information about the Law Project for Psych Rights, they can go to www.psychrights.org, and there is a wealth of information there. And perhaps one day you and Jim can come on and do a show just talking about all the great work that you're all doing.
Anytime. We're not doing much. We're just trying as best we can.
And support them financially as much as you can. As Psych Rights has been very successful with several lawsuits where children, especially the Psych Rights is a protector of children. We have many cases in many states where they're off-label use, where children are being crippled by this. They've been crippled by the use of psychiatric medication. And I know that Lauren has not said this, but we have to find a way to support, to keep this radio program going. I know this myself in trying to do things in the District of Columbia. People don't realize sometimes that it does cost, and we've got to do stuff And I know it's mid-hour before we close, and Lauren, I hope you would talk about the Mind Freedom Conference and other upcoming events.
Yes, we definitely will be talking about that. I heard Lester trying to get in there. So, Lester, did you have something that you wanted to?
Well, you know, for years, folks of trans experience were denied access to surgery. There was a researcher a long time ago who was a woman by the name of Johnson, I believe the name is, and she used to say that denying specifically men of trans experience the opportunity to medically transition was a farce because they were really lesbians and all this other stuff, and it was really, really difficult. So for the longest time, Medicare and Medicaid would not allow access to surgical procedures. And that's all now finally changing because probably one of the highest suicide rates are for folks
Medicare
with trans experience.
Is paying for it now.
Excuse me?
Medicare is paying for transitional treatment now.
Yes, medical transition. And what's funny is people are like up in arms over the fact that they're saying, you know, they may not pay for it, they may not. They have to go through all this stuff. But even in private insurance, there's a lot of haranguing to get them to pay for general reassignment surgery, especially what most folks consider what they call about lower surgeries. So for women, when they have an orphanectomy, for men, it's when they have metatarsoplasty or phalloplasty. And I went and I read the thing, and I was kind of like, well, this is really, it falls more in line in with private insurance than it does exclusion, saying that it's cosmetic. It's not, it's now it's medical necessity. And, you know, I'm hoping that for folks with trans experience, many of whom are my brothers and sisters, they'll no longer kill themselves as a result thereof, because they were denied access to those things years and years ago. You know, I think, you know, that is maybe the one bright spot, because what they're looking at trying to do is the DSM-5 recoded from gender identity disorder to gender identity dysphoria. The idea behind it is to eventually move it to the International Code of Diagnostics, which is the ICD model. It's supposed to be the complement to the DSM for medical stuff. The idea is to move everything over to there, and then once you have transitioned, allegedly you're out. You've got an escape clause.
I think that these are really important issues, and I know that we're supposed to have a show on this specifically, and because of my technical issues, it got screwy. But we will be rescheduling that, and I think that it's definitely worth really looking into on a deep level, because the suicide rate of people who are LGBTQI2SA is exceptionally high, and there are alternatives that can be done. And I think the ruling that came in to allow the surgery and medical assistance is really important, and that people should be informed about it if they're not. So I do think that is, and I thank you for bringing that in, Lester. I also want to get back, though, to this idea of what's going on with SAMHSA and the idea that they can put forth that there are, you know, potential, until a quote-unquote vaccine comes, that there are all of these alternatives that can be used, and what's happening with that mess over there.
My problem is that they sold out. My problem is that they sold out. For me, it was real simple.
I think they got a gun to their head, and that might be what's happening. They got a gun to their head.
I think Paolo Delvecchio is worried about his nice, cushy job.
I don't know if that's the case.
Beginning, middle, and end of story. Like I said before, in my opinion, if any one of these men has been a man of color, this would be an entirely different conversation. We would be talking about violent crime. We would be talking about death penalty. We would talk about everything and its mother. okay? But instead, we're talking about, and Tory and Jaffe push exact same agenda, okay? It's a small, minute subset of a population that doesn't recognize. Bad news here. Anagosia only occurs when you have a stroke. Something actually
Amen.
Has to happen to have someone have anagosia. So they've made up this nonsense to try to get the public to buy into something, to say folks have a diagnosis that they really don't have. And we don't want to talk about the fact that, you know, things happen and trauma creates and all this other stuff. I mean, it just makes me sick. And
well,
then you got cancer that decided it was in their best interest to just sell us down the river. And, you know, they decided they were going to buy the Tory Jaffe can of snake oil wholesale.
We're not going to let that happen.
You know, and I think that's problematic. Don't sit there and say,
go ahead, Lester.
You represent me or that you speak for me, because at that point, no, you don't.
I think that people just are not aware of the fraud, because they're being actively lied to by the larger by the politicians, which I guess is no surprise at the end of the day, and by the industry, which wants to see this go forward. Trauma has come
Here's
up again, and
why didn't Paulo talk about the fine that Merck received back in the 80s for not letting folks know that Prozac causes violence? Why didn't Paulo talk about that?
I don't know why those who are in positions of power are avoiding the reality of the issues of the SSRIs and their association with violence. I don't know why those in power are not talking about the fraud of psychiatry. I don't know why every time that they bring up the term mental illness, that there isn't an immediate clarifier saying that there is no biological evidence for any of this. The National Institute of Mental Health makes it clear there is no biological test, there's no brain scan, there's no genetic link, there is no evidence of any of this. And yet they are pushing this forward under the auspices that there is something to exist. The trauma issues have repeatedly come up, and I want to point people to the guidebook that was prepared by Andrea Blanche, Beth Filson, Darby Penny, with contributions from Kathy Cave, Engaging Women in Trauma-Informed Peer Support, working on trying to get a show focused entirely on the guide that maybe Darby and Kathy and others will come on and, you know, walk us through what it is. But if people want to take a look at it, it can be found at www.nasmhpd.org/publications/engagingwomen.aspx. And although it is focused on women, that it really is beyond gender, and that any of these principles can be extended to anyone.
One of the conversations I had with Darby after she made that publication, I talked about, for example, one engaging in the practice of getting one's doctorate. How that in and of itself can be a traumatic experience. Not the end result, meaning, i.e., one has a doctorate in hand and now can economically support oneself, but the entire process, the indoctrination process of becoming the doctor.
Well, I don't know if having a doctorate in hand means that you can now economically support yourself, unless it's cutting meat at the deli, I guess. But I do think that trauma is something that is very, very real. and that the rate of abuse, physical and sexual abuse, that young people, 2 out of every 3 girls, 1 out of every 3 boys is sexually abused before their 16th birthday in the United States, and upwards of 96% of people who are in state-operated psychiatric facilities have childhood histories of abuse and neglect. And so as a society, we need to stop focusing on this fraud of a biomedical model and start really talking about the hard issues about ending child abuse in this country. If you want to prevent these kinds of things from happening, then we need to create communities that are actually supportive of people. And a pill is not going to create a community. A pill is not going to give somebody a house.
The only reason why I'm silent, this is Von Smith, is because I agree 100% with everything that Lester and Lorna said. Because in our public hospital, we've had people who have fathered children by healthcare professionals. So this abuse had gone on for decades, and the fact that we were enlarging and have more people to be susceptible to be under the thumb of an institution is reprehensible to me. Totally.
Lauren, I got to get off because I got to go back inside the shelter.
Okay.
I'll talk
okay.
to you later.
Okay. All right, Lester. Thanks for coming
All
on.
All right. Take care, Yvonne. Have a good night.
Thanks, Lester, and thanks for bringing up these very important issues. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Ciao.
And so I think that these are the problems that we're facing as a society. We need to educate people. We need to get an alternative out. I encourage people to write to the media, write to your legislators. Give them your own perspectives on the situation and work tirelessly to try to correct the frauds that are being perpetuated by the politicians and those who want to see us lose our constitutional rights. And don't forget, in the 1930s, when they started this, they came after people who had psychiatric histories first. They tested the gas chambers on us, and they moved forward through that way. And so it may be this idea of this other person that they are going after now, but they are coming for all of us. And this is about social control. This is about limiting the rights of us as an entire population of people. And we need to continue to speak out and educate ourselves and others about what is going on in our society right now before it is too late. Bills that Thompson and Barber
and... You don't know who your House of Representatives person is. Go to the U.S. House of Representatives. Right now, I'm not knowledgeable that there's a Senate bill. Usually the way this works, and many people need to go back to their old government and civics books, usually what happens is when they have competing bills in the House and the Senate, there's a conference to iron out the discrepancies between the two. I would also say write to your U.S. senator. Every state has 2 U.S. senators. And express your fear, two things, about the bad things happening about denial of rights, and also this is the strongest thing, the fear that people will not come forth that might need some counseling, that people will go underground, that might need some temporary assistance, whether it's a crisis or whatever. And so I would say don't wait for the Senate to have a bill. Write to your senator. They have 2 state senators now saying that you fear that this is a 1930s Nazi-like concentration camp. Well, that's what it is. Because there's a guy from NDRN said today on Diane Reed, and he was more conservative than myself or Lauren. See, this is a slippery slope that's fraught with disaster. And this is the more conservative view of this. write to your congressperson, write to your senator. Tell them of your concern about denial of your rights. Tell them about Justina, what's happened there. I would say we have those people who live in Connecticut, Tennessee, New Mexico, and trying to think of the other three states. Tennessee, New Mexico, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Maryland, their senators should be all over this because those are five states who have said we don't need assisted outpatient treatment, and most of these states have allocated money to outreach to people who might be who might need a different assistance. You know, I don't understand why Republican Congressperson Murphy is in favor of denying states their rights, states' rights. I don't understand this.
That's right, and that's a whole other issue, the idea of states' rights being able to determine and the financial incentives that are put in the Murphy bill for states to have to create involuntary outpatient commitment laws. These are dangerous laws that people are subject to, and as we've seen in New York State, there is an overrepresentation of people of color who are being subjected to these laws because there is a clear overrepresentation of people of color in institutions. And so we can't, again, go without talking about the institutional and structural racism and classism that is gearing these kinds of bills. Area code 310, 310, 310, 310, your line is open.
Hello, Lauren, this is Maxine. I'm sorry to call in so late, but I've been very, very busy after being tied up with the Diane Rehm show this morning.
Yeah,
can you
thank
hear
you
me?
For calling in. I can hear you. Thank you for calling in. What would you like to talk about, Maxine?
Okay, I posted today the article from the Alliance for Human Research Protection, Vera Sharif's group, the article of two NIMH directors debunk the DSM and deplore psychiatry's unscientific modus operandi. Did you happen to see that article?
I did, and I was planning on talking about it, so thanks. Could you give a little overview of why this is so important?
Well, it's so important because it debunks the DSM and is being debunked in the article by Dr. Thomas Insel, NIMH, and Dr. Steve Hyman, who's the provost of Harvard. And it goes into detail about, like Dr. Hyman saying, the underlying science remains immature, the molecular and cellular underpinnings of psychiatric disorders remain unknown. There is a broad delusionment with the animal models used for decades to predict therapeutic efficacy. Psychiatric diagnoses seem arbitrary and lack objective tests. There is no validated biomarkers to which to judge the success of the clinical trials. He goes on to say that the molecular actions of all widely used antidepressants, anti-anxiety drugs, and antipsychotic drugs are relatively unchanged since the 1950 prototypes. Current antidepressants alter levels of the neurotransmitters, serotonin and norepinephrine, in synaptic connectors between certain nerve cells in the brain. This is the same basic action of the first modern antidepressant, Impramine, discovered in 1957. The drugs, they are saying, this entire article is saying, are no good. They have no efficacy. I really think that it's time that the entire consumer lived experience advocates come forward on the psychiatric drug issues and really stand up against it being the first line of treatment. At one time, I worked for a methadone maintenance program. And did you know that now people with substance abuse disorders are being considered all of a sudden dual diagnosis, co-occurring disorders, and now they're being put on psychiatric drugs. It used to be when the funding streams were truly separate between mental health and substance abuse that for substance abuse, the only goal was to become drug-free. They used drugs. And, you know, now because of, you know, in particular NAMI and their pharmaceutical industry drug cartel members, we have the horrible situation we have now. It's chemical warfare. And,
It's a war going on.
Right.
And I made a post recently. The Justice Department recently released a, press release asking people who have been unfairly sentenced for non-violent crimes around drug issues to appeal for clemency.
Right.
And I believe that this is part of this, that people are fearful of these tens of thousands of people coming out of prison who have been kept for minor violations like having possession of marijuana and whatever else. And they want to be able to detain them. And the only way to detain them is to detain them in mental health hospitals. I think this is not the major reason, but it is also a reason for this happening.
Well,
so they can be.
It's frightening, and this Murphy bill and the Barber bill, as far as I'm concerned, it's only perpetuating the pharmaceutical industry deep pockets. And you know, I feel that you know, Murphy's been bought by Tory and the pharmaceutical industry, and you know, that's what they do. They lobby.
And they lie.
You know, it needs to be stopped. But the entire movement needs to come together and really focus on the psychiatric drugs being the first line of treatment. We used to have an array of services that people could choose from. And, you know, when things changed with the APA, and they started being paid off by the pharmaceutical industry from the time before they even got out of school, they dropped any kind of therapy that they used to perform and so forth. And all the alternatives, like the full array of services, were stripped from mental health.
Well, it's going to, if the Murphy exists and it passed, you'll get more, because what they want to do is to take, people don't understand that there's not a finite amount of dollars for Medicaid. If you take Medicaid dollars and say, we're going to pay for people being impatient, and they're talking about 1 to 5%, depending on what data you have, a small percentage of people. Of I call them frequent flyers, where you're going to force them to be in treatment. And even on the Diane Reams show, where the woman says her son was forcibly in treatment since he was 8 years of age, and it's not doing any good.
Well, you know, the pharmaceutical industry has lost a significant amount of money to the lawsuits. I mean, for God's sake, even risperidol causing breasts on men.
But it's,
you know,
not enough. What happens is a couple of billion dollars is nothing to them. You have to realize that.
And so all they do is pay it off and the drum beats on. But the thing
is
that if everybody's got together, we know that the drugs are no good.
Absolutely.
Everybody needs to and focus on letting the public and the legislators and everybody else that can be reached know that it's poison.
It is poison. And Maxine and everybody else who's called in tonight, I want to thank you. We're about out of time. I want to say that on Wednesday night from 8 to 10, we are going to have a special show, 8 p.m. Eastern to 10 p.m. We are going to have a special show on electroshock, a crime against humanity, with Sue Wittenberg, Don Weitz, George Ebert, John Breeding, Brenda LaFrancois, and Loretta Wilson. Tomorrow night, the show may air at a later date, at a later time than ordinary. I will be posting it up online, but my parents will kill me if I don't go to graduation. So I've got to go to my graduation tomorrow night. So I will. Our regular show will not air from 9 to 11 tomorrow night, but may air later.
Okay,
Lauren, we'll look for your posting. Will you please go over that IMH director's letter again?
I will.
On the diagnostics, because they can't. How can they even think about the Murphy Bill and diagnosing people when they don't have a diagnostic manual? The last thing that was said here is psychiatry in crisis. Mental health director rejects psychiatric Bible and replaces it with nothing.
I will do that, and on Thursday night from 9 to 11, we will be continuing this conversation. Please tune in on the special show on Electroshock on Wednesday night from 8 to 10. If you have a tip, 718-273-8708, 718-273-8708. Keep on talking until I talk to you next time. Talk to you soon. Thanks, everyone.